YouTube is not the only thing out there for sharing videos. Actually, there are a number of sites that get taken up and then either fail or start to succeed in providing video makers and video consumers with a way to meet and to consume and share content. Well, Audacy and Library, which are kind of directly related, are one of those alternative options. In this episode of the Voice of Reason podcast and video interview series, I speak with the founding lead head idea guy of Library/Audacy, Jeremy Kaufman. We talk about the particulars of Library, which is not necessarily a website. It's more of a Bitcoin-esque database of information. And then we talk about the usefulness of this technology and the resilience in the face of censorship, which is something that we should all be worried about and keeping tabs on. I do highly recommend you go and check out these websites. The UI is gorgeous. It's very usable, and it does pay off for us to put our eggs in more than one basket if we don't necessarily trust the current technology communication regime, which I have to say, I don't necessarily completely trust myself. So without further ado, here is Jeremy Kaufman.
So what is Library?
The fancy sentence, the confusing sentence, is that Library is a blockchain-based decentralized network that provides content discovery, distribution, and purchase.
Yeah.
But what that really means is that it's designed to make experiences like YouTube possible, but without the underlying central point of control. Another way we like to put it sometimes is that Library does to publishing what Bitcoin did to money. It's saying that we can have this system, and the system can work, and the system can have these certain desirable properties about sharing and publishing and trusting what we're finding and the ability to like pay people for their work. You know, we can have all of this built into the system, but the system doesn't have to be owned by one person or one party.
Okay. I can't get my head around blockchain.
Yeah,
I know that there is a bunch of data. Let's just say I have a bunch of videos in there. I don't know where that is. Is that a server or is it not centralized? It's just like bits floating around in this tube.
Yeah. So your content is actually not directly in the blockchain. The metadata is in the blockchain. So the metadata is like who published it and when and what's the title and what's it about. And this sort of proof that you the Benjamin that people trust and follow, you're the one that published it, and this is you, and that's your identity, and people can see what you're up to and all these things. That's on the blockchain. The content itself is in it's a BitTorrent like kind of peer to peer network. Mm-hmm. Is where the content is actually stored.
Mm-hmm. So everybody who's running Library is sharing all the data on it, or are there like dedicated servers that are sharing this?
The desktop users are contributing to the network, and there's tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of those. And then there are also nodes that we run, especially related to our web instances, because the web instances are coming through your browser. They're not directly in the peer-to-peer network. So when you're just going onto the website like Audacy.com, you're not directly in that peer-to-peer network. When you're using the desktop client, you're in the peer-to-peer network.
Okay. And what is Library/Audacy? You already said this, but what is it really? What was the gestation of the idea and like the basic things that you guys had to figure out how to get this to work, like from like your end and then from the user's end? Like what were you trying to solve and how did you solve that?
Yeah, so the gestation of the idea was me being curious about blockchain, and fundamentally, you know, a blockchain is a database. That's what it is, first and foremost, in my opinion. It's a database. What's interesting about it is that we can have this database and we can all interact with it, but it's not owned by one person. It's not owned by one bank or one company. But it is a database. And what Bitcoin is doing is it's using that database to maintain a ledger of accounts, how much balance is in each address. Mm-hmm. And so that's the kind of conception that I was having around Bitcoin. And gosh, that would have been like 2014 at this point when I was first learning about Bitcoin. And continue to think about it. And I was running another software company at the time and got onto this idea of using it to maintain a record of digital content, of information. That's actually why it's called library. This idea that we can have this sort of digital commons, in a sense, not commons in the sense that everything in it is free necessarily, but in the sense that it's shared, that this cataloging of information. And yes, I put even like memes and videos and things, in this is, I'm not saying it's all necessarily like high minded stuff, but, it's that we can have this and we can use a blockchain to do it. And I just fell in love with that idea. And eventually I couldn't stop thinking about it. And I know that once I can't stop thinking about an idea, I have to work on it. And so here we are. Yeah. And Odyssey was an evolution of it. Odyssey was actually a reaction to, we were talking about this at the beginning, there's been some confusion about exactly what library is. And so we want Odyssey. Here's Odyssey. And this is really important. If all this sounded like nonsense, right? You go to Odyssey and it just works. If you just want a YouTube-like experience, yeah, without the bad policy, without supporting, a company that's become highly political, you can go there and you just have that experience. For a lot of people go onto Odyssey, that's their first time using cryptocurrency, and they don't even realize they're using it. It's so there's this sort of underlying layer that's really interesting and can get complicated, but you don't need to understand it. You don't need to know how your engine works to drive your car. And so if you just want to like drive the car and have that, just go to odyssey.com.
Yeah. That is one thing that, again, I can't really wrap my head around that. There are there's a library coin that every time I upload a video, I pay from a balance. And then when people view it, I get more. There's like this weird number. What does that mean?
that number is your balance. That number is the amount of tokens you have. And so there will eventually be around 1 billion of those. It's all that will ever exist.
Okay.
And you do, you use a small amount when you publish something. That's actually for the most part not used up. A very small amount of it is used in a transaction fee, very small amount. Mm-hmm. And then some of it additionally gets sort of locked up to keep the content available. And it's used in some other ways there. But the locked up part you can actually get back even. So it does use a small amount to publish, but it's a very small amount.
Yeah. And but how does that number tie to any other monetary system?
It doesn't. It does in the sense that there's a price for it. There would be a price for any other commodity. I actually think if you want to think about this is this might be a strange. I think like you should think of the library token as something like a commodity, where that commodity will be something like space in this global catalog, this catalog that lists kind of everything, not everything that exists, but everything in this like space of digital content that exists, where it's like everything will be in that catalog. Because if you're not, it will be this like foundational store of finding content, of knowing that it exists. You won't necessarily go to it to think like ISBN almost, right, for books. Right, where you have this open, but it's ISBN is controlled by entities. Now you have this system that's actually not controlled, right? And that's what that library layer is fundamentally providing. It's almost something like that.
Okay.
The token is a tiny piece of the ability to like participate in that system, if that makes sense.
Okay.
But there's value in that because that catalog has value. You want to be in that catalog. The token is used for other things. Like, you also can use it to like just tip people and to compensate them. And there's also a staking system. So we're doing some things around trust and identity that are actually under development around the token. But that's what it is. It's this tiny amount of space in this catalog. It's kind of weird. It's kind of a weird thing to get your head around, but that's how I would try to explain it.
That it might be easier for me to ground myself in what's going on, what the stakes are for this. If you extrapolate a little bit more about why my identity is important, or what that concept of trust is.
I think this is a much better way to think about it, rather than getting wrapped up in all of the economy and the the fundamental thing that a blockchain can do is it can allow local control of a system that I interact with. So in Bitcoin, I'm interacting with the Bitcoin network, but I have control. I don't surrender that control to anyone else. We think that our online sort of identity and how we publish and create things should have the same property. I shouldn't have to surrender who I am to like interact in these sort of like public squares, essentially, right? That's not something that I should have to surrender to the big tech company. And so that is the property that blockchain lets us do. That's honestly why we were in love with it and wanted to build this company. I think the financial aspects are important. They're very relevant to the technology and it working. But like, first and foremost, we care about that. We care about having the system where you can create things and you don't have to surrender control to, you don't have to trust us. You don't have to trust me. To the same, when you use Facebook or these other services, you're really saying like, well, I'm surrendering everything to these guys, to these small groups of people. Yeah. And so that's what I think is really important about what we're doing.
So when I use Facebook, I am the commodity. That's kind of the, or I am the product basically. And they take all of my information, and in exchange for them owning all of my data or whatever data they can make out of me, I get to interact with other data points, other people, so-called, that are on the other end of that system. But they own everything between me and the other person. If that is the case for Facebook, for Google, that and all these other companies, that the user is basically the product, then the product doesn't. We're like chattel. We're like, tomatoes. We are there. They can do whatever they want with us. They can turn us into paste or into pizza sauce or whatever. And therefore, we can't really build a sustainable bill of rights, an internet bill of rights, without some sort of local ownership, without like a stake, an individual stake. Do you think that is the way forward for how do we get to the next level of what we're doing on the internet in that sense?
Yeah, I mean, this is I think what's been going on is absolutely terrible. I think it's extremely concerning, but I think that it's something that can be solved through, good old fashioned entrepreneurship and competition. Like, these platforms do have major network effects. Like, there's no doubt about it, and it's hard for these things to be disrupted, but it takes time. Like, a lot of people are just waking up to some of these problems. And so, if Facebook and some of these networks are the same size in 5 or 10 years, then, maybe you could convince me that they somehow can't be disrupted. And they're continuing to behave this way, of course. But I don't think this is the case. I think, our growth is absolutely incredible. And I think that these Web3 sort of networks that are being built, and we're not the only one. Yeah. They're really coming online. They're really reaching a place, and so there's already a real community of people that are hanging out, that are talking and interacting. It's not this early stage thing. And so I don't think they're gonna be the size that they are in 3 or 5 years.
I guess that's an open question. And you mentioned before we started speaking about how you guys might be under assault, or if you guys are a contender, then those Goliaths are going to come after you, right?
Yeah.
And they're coming after all of us with regards to the way in which there's small C cancel culture and then big C cancel culture. And Twitter, Facebook, Google have that capital C because they can deperson you. They can shut you down. Whereas like the small C is just peer-to-peer cancellation, which is a social.
Could they shut down Bitcoin?
Can they?
Yeah.
I do not know. I don't know how Bitcoin would not be shut down or how they wouldn't they be able to like just liquidate the value or tax the hell out of it, I guess, if they're already.
Yeah, I mean, look, as I studied physics originally, and so I'm a difficult person to get to say the word impossible.
Okay.
It's going to be very, very challenging. Like, because the Bitcoin network is very challenging to disrupt. And I'm not going to say that Library has those properties quite yet, but we have them at a smaller scale and they continue to get larger as the network grows. I don't think, and we certainly can't get disrupted in the way that like a Parler did, never going to happen. I think it's going to be really hard. The entire system is designed to have sort of different properties from what came before. And I think it's going to be, those properties make it genuinely challenging for this ever to happen. I also, by the way, I will say like, I also think like if you go to Odyssey, like it's not like it's full of any of this kind of thing anyway. To some extent, I don't even want to like accept the narrative that some of these places are going to try to push. They want to, to the extent that some, even Parler, right? Like that, this is big tech, you know, working with the media to paint a picture that I don't even think is true, right? Like it's not true that the Capitol riots or the storming of the Capitol was you know, planned primarily out, planned on Parler, right? Yeah. Primarily planned on Facebook or other places, like you know. So this is the planting of, I think, a somewhat false narrative. I think we are starting to see the same thing with us. Like we were in the New York Times recently. And so they did the thing where they say that, you know, white nationalists are coming onto the platform. And it's like, well, you know, 75% of white nationalists eat at McDonald's. Like, is that a white nationalist restaurant? But like, this is the kind of game they're trying to play. It's like, okay, 20 million people used the platform last month. Okay, like you found a couple of white nationalists. Like, go to the homepage. Yeah. You know, it's like it's not the popular, to the extent that you can find whatever is on there. And I don't go on watching everything. It's not the popular stuff because I look at the reports. I see what's getting the most views. You know, I see what's doing well. You know, so these claims are, you know, ridiculous. You know, they're printing this article. It's like, well, you didn't mention anything about this surge from Taiwan that we got. You know, we got a bunch of press in Taiwan. Half of our app installs were coming from Taiwan and the Asian Pacific region, and they're trying to say it's like and this alt-right surge. And it's like, well, you don't even have any data. Like, you're just saying it.
I think people are waking up. A lot of things have happened in the last couple months, and it's pretty obvious the way that, let's just say, and I don't want to come down one way or the other politically, but just as an example, the way that CNN treated the previous president as opposed to how they're treating this current president is completely different. And it's very obvious to a lot of people, like, oh, these people are pushing a certain narrative. And with regards to New York Times, there's some questions about, you know, what does journalistic integrity mean to them? And it seems like they have a certain set of values that they're pushing. And they are going after a number of different things. But just recently, I believe it was yesterday, they went after another tech platform, emerging tech platform called Clubhouse, which is basically these roaming chat rooms. And New York Times kind of painted it in a negative light. Like, oh, no, there's all these unfettered conversations. There's all these conversations that we can't fact check. You know, we can't control these people, you know.
It's so ridiculous. And the framing has to be rejected entirely. Like, these are people who are like, you know, positing that like coffee shops and bars shouldn't exist. Yeah. I mean, people, this is how especially now, right? And when, like, literally in a large parts of the world, the government is saying you are not allowed to go to places and talk to other people. You're suggesting that we need that, like, online services can't exist without monitors. People can't talk without monitors. Like, what? Like, that should be, like, such an absolutely, like, outrageous and, like, flat out chilling kind of sentiment. I did see they got absolutely ratioed on that, though. So that was good. Yeah. But it's very
obvious that they're all in bed together and that new tech platforms are the enemy. So with regards to Parler just basically was a new Twitter, and they use kind of the same infrastructure in a way. I don't know how it scales, but they have all their data on servers that they're renting. Because all that data is on servers that they're renting, and because they have a app, then they are open to attack by anybody that can police, like that. There's a cartoon. If you don't like it, build your own website, and then build your own payment model, and then build your own electrical grid, and then build your own language or whatever, because they'll just chase you down the chain of build your own. Yeah. Library and other what you call Web3 technology is completely different than that. It's decentralized. It's impervious, or at least resistant to that sort of attack. Now, it can be attacked culturally by saying that you guys are all right, but infrastructure-wise, it's robust. Is that correct?
Yes, I believe it's very robust. Yes.
Okay. And then I believe. Yeah, and how does that work when my person is uploaded to wherever it's uploaded? How do I retain control over that, and how do I evade people that want to deperson me?
So I should be clear, when you publish something to Library, we don't promise that you can retain control over it. That's sort of foundational to publish something anywhere, in my opinion. Okay. And so I don't want to misrepresent something. Anyone can download a video from YouTube, right? YouTube DL, et cetera.
Yeah.
But you do retain control over that channel, over all of your channels, over that identity, over your balance, over who you're following, over certain other settings and records about how you want to be using the.
My fingerprints are all over it, and they retain over.
Well, this all is actually maintained in your what's called your wallet. Which is a term in the blockchain space. It's basically this sort of private. It's like a similar to, your wallet in your pocket, and it contains all of these private details, and that's yours. And so you will then be able to take that wallet. You can use it in the desktop mode and use it very privately. You can potentially take it to other services, right? There's not going to necessarily be only one. There already isn't only one way to interact with the Library network. And so this gives you a level of control that's like fairly unprecedented.
Okay. And will technologies like this converge with other technologies with your cousins out there? Is that, do you foresee that that's how it's going to have to happen, or?
I think that's possible. We're certainly friendly to that. I encourage people to check out all kinds of things in this space, just because I think there are very interesting things happening, and it's always good to be a little bit earlier here. We don't have that specifically on our on our roadmap, but we'll see how these start, where they start to like bump up against one another, and how we can potentially work together.
And what about usability? How do you pitch it to the user, the end user? What's being offered other than all the stuff that we talked about, privacy, security, individuality? Like, what is it providing on terms of just brunt entertainment and interaction?
Yeah, it's an incredible roster of stuff, I would say. And it's, you don't need to come on just because you're concerned about, deplatforming or these other political things. If you just like YouTube more a decade ago than now in terms of what you could find on there, I think that you'll have a better time on Odyssey. And so, you can just load the homepage, check out some of the categories, and see some of the content that's available over there, and just have a better experience. There's a lot.
Tons.
Tons.
How much stuff is being uploaded per day, like hours of content? Do you have like a figure like that that we can marvel at?
I don't have hours at my fingertips. We're certainly talking about tens of thousands of new videos every day. Yeah. We probably haven't crossed 100,000. Definitely tens of thousands. We're at more than 10 million videos overall.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. And from the perspective of a creator, what are you guys offering now? And then what's on the roadmap for expanded powers of creativity on the platforms?
So for creators, one thing I'll really emphasize is that if you have a YouTube channel, you can sync it to the library network. So you just create an account on Odyssey. It will do everything for you. So it's really, really easy. So even if you're not convinced by all of this, it is very easy. So it's kind of like a low effort investment that can I think really pay off. More than once, actually, we've had a creator be like, they've even done it and like maybe sort of forgot about it, and then they had some issue with the video, and they're like, oh, it's still on library, and then they become fans. Just the ability to have that. To have that control, to have that direct interaction with your audience, to know that the funds are yours, to be able to get monetized right away for the up and coming creator. That's another thing that that we offer. You know, and YouTube has become this place where they're much more interested in emphasizing, you know, like Stephen Colbert and like Gordon Ramsay and like, you know, almost like a cable television tips on, you know, on demand. I mean, there's other stuff, obviously. I know you do well there, and I know there are people who do well there. And so I'm not trying to say that they're doing nothing, but I think that they are just becoming more corporate and more cable TV, you know? Yeah. And so if that's not your vibe, I think that you're going to have a good time on Odyssey.
Okay.
Both as a creator and as a user.
One thing that's pretty marvelous about YouTube, and sorry to praise your competitor, but
it's fair.
They came before. They hooked me up with an audience, thousands of people, and they provide me the ability to continue growth. Now, I know that things are changing, especially within the political sphere. It looks like, you know, they've been messing around, so it's not too trustworthy. But they are good at hooking me up with users and with viewers and stuff. What kind of algorithm or how do you pair up people? And I guess this is kind of a technical question. It might even be proprietary. But is there, how to phrase this politely, how do I connect with other people on that platform? Is there a sharing circle? Is there some sort of like pairing of people's interests with each other?
So yeah, you can find suggestions as well as like, you know, like trending algorithms and other ways of discovering content. It absolutely is, you know, look, I mean, you have. I should have looked before I came on, but I bet you've got a decent number of followers.
It's doing pretty good. It's doing actually really good. I was looking at it earlier today.
Yeah. And so that's what we're seeing. You know, Zuby joined recently and started talking about the platform on Twitter, and like, you know, he picked up 5-10,000 followers like in just like, I don't know, a couple of weeks. It was very quick. And so there are definitely a lot of people on who are eager to embrace, you know, right? So there's a lot of people on the user side who are, I mean, you probably have some of them in your audience who are like, you know, really who are fed up, right? And so a lot of these people are trying to, on the viewer side, are trying to consume content on these other platforms. And so when they see you come on to this one, you know, there is an audience that's gonna be there, right? Mm-hmm. And so it really makes sense to, we don't say, hey, drop YouTube, but like, I think at this point, it's pretty foolish to not have a presence, right? Is my opinion.
And as far as aesthetics go, like the videos that you guys take from my YouTube channel, I don't know how you guys get them, but they're all high quality and the user interface is gorgeous and it's very pleasing to me, which is a big hitch for a new website. Like if I don't like it, I don't want to be on it. I like the design. I like the flow of it. It's all very, very silken, very like a very nice Dove bar, or some sort of high quality chocolate, milk chocolate going on. So I give you guys a lot of props for that.
Thank you so much. There's really no compliment I'd rather receive than the product is good. I'll be honest, Ben. I shitpost a little bit. I can't help myself on social media. I feel like I'm rewarded for it too. And so, you know, if you do that occasionally, you post something and you're like, oh, maybe that's a little harsh, right? Or whatever. And so I saw someone post the other day, and I don't know who it was, but it must've been someone I said something to. And he said, you know, Kaufman is a complete dick, but I really like library.tv. You really like library. And I was like, that is the best compliment I've ever received. Because it's like, you know, if you're still saying that the product is something that you enjoy, because that's like, I want it to be a really good product. I care about that so much. I was in the basically SaaS product space, software product space before this, before starting this company. And so that's how we win, right? Is by just having a product that people really, really like using. And I think we've built a great one.
Yeah, it's excellent. What are some of the things that are in the pipes for next level interaction stuff on the side of user and content creator? What's coming down the pipes?
A bunch. We started live streaming. We've been doing live stream tests with some creators. Yeah,
really?
Yeah.
Great.
You trying to get in on that? Yeah.
It'd be nice to double stream.
We'll talk. Yeah. But so live streaming is going to, it's not in the interface yet, but we're testing it with some creators. Playlists are going to finally be there. A long requested feature. Really probably the biggest missing, like, feature parody kind of thing. We're doing more stuff with the token. So there's going to be more indicators around your channel, around who's tipping and supporting it. We're going to be combining it with the commenting and interaction system more. Just also helping creators get more support, helping you identify where that support is coming from, these kinds of things. So there's a bunch coming around the token, and also like part of how we've got the product to where it is, you know, this is iteration 75 of core, you know, the core things that it does, and we will be on, you know, iteration 110. You know, like we don't stop making the core stuff better.
And so just to be clear, the core stuff is basically video channels. That's basically, it's built around video channels. Is there any thoughts about making it like audio only stream for like low bandwidth? You just want to have a podcast version of this in your on your phone, in your pocket, kind of stuff like that?
So there is support for some other media types. Like the next most commonly used type is actually probably text. You can make text posts. We are exploring that of either launching different apps, you know, that would be like, or different views. We're still not sure what it would be that are more oriented towards either podcast experience or like blogging, like text news, type experiences. Excellent. I think I think Substack is doing a good job here, so we're probably not saying we're exactly throwing our hat in the ring, but I do think like journalism and news in particular is so messed up, and I think that whether it's us or not, the trend is going to be more trusting of like individual voices. I know that's how I've completely become, where like if there's someone I trust at like a mainstream outlet, it's because I like, oh, that guy or that woman, like I trust that person to be fair because I've seen that they've been fair at other times. Otherwise, it's like if you're writing for, you know, CNN, New York Times, like whatever, like I assume it's garbage at this point, right? Like I assume that the average story is like more likely to mislead me than inform me.
Yeah. Our trust in institutions is probably all-time low and tanking, but human beings still need to trust providers of information, providers of narratives, providers of stories, and so it's going to be rebooted through the individuals and then collectives of individuals, and probably eventually we'll have our institutions back, but at this point, it looks like they need to be restarted.
It's crazy. It's crazy. Have you read or had Gurry on your show, Martin Gurry and his Revolt of the Public idea?
No, not yet. No.
I think you'd like this one, and probably your fans too. He has some really interesting ideas around how like we're having these this like crisis of trust in elites and what's driving it. Like, I mean, you really, that's what I was going to, because he's, what you're just saying is very much his thesis as well. And he covered the Arab Spring and the revolutions there. And he thinks a lot of it is related to, like social media is part of driving. I mean, look at Tesla, you know, saying we don't even care about the press. We'll just talk, you know, directly, right? Tesla recently, a Tesla drop, they said, we're not maintaining it. We have no media relations team. Right. Okay. We're not talking to reporters. We're just going to we'll issue videos and press releases directly. And we're just not going to really work with the press. Yeah. And it's like, it's crazy what's going on. I mean, that's like, could you imagine a company, you know, saying that, you know, a decade ago even?
And as long as I mean, and we can't even trust the ways in which those companies that are sharing the individual voices. So work like what you're doing with Library and Odyssey is going to be very, it's just going to increase in value and increase in value the way that's going. Do you foresee any like replacement for Twitter or Facebook? Because there's a market for that. But I wonder if you see any of that.
I think Minds.com is definitely one of the more interesting ones, more advanced offerings.
Yeah, they came under the target a couple of weeks ago, or like I guess it was a month ago.
That was we've been getting co-featured. I'm trying. We've extended an invitation to the New York Times to have a public discussion with us, but I'm not sure. Apparently, they might not be interested.
You don't think?
We'll find out. Yeah.
Well, cool. What else do you think that people know? I'm trying to upgrade the amount of plugging that I'm doing for this site and a couple of other sites. So I think we covered I think we started pretty technical, but we covered the basis of the power and the value of this stuff. What other things are on the horizon or what other steps are you guys taking to bring more people on the platform, and how can somebody like me and my followers help you guys out? Like, what's the best way to support your project?
I mean, it's really, it's, if you're not already watching this video on Odyssey.com or through the Odyssey app, we just launched on iOS. So there's now an iOS app. Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah. I should have mentioned that sooner, probably bad at my job. But just like, that's it. You know, it's easy. It's not hard. We're not asking for much, I'm not even asking for your money. I'm asking you if you'd like verify an email address and then watch videos with fewer ads. It's like, it's a great deal. There's really no reason not to do it. And that's really the only request is to go follow Ben and all the other great creators. A bunch of the creators you like, if you like Ben, a bunch of the creators you like are going to be on Odyssey.
Go
follow them over there.
A lot of there. And if they're not there, they should be there pretty soon. Great. Well, you sound like, you're in a really busy state right now. Do you have any parting wisdom from an internet tech guru?
We might be in CNN tomorrow, so we'll see what kind of treatment they give us.
Wait, are you going to be talking to them or being talked about by them?
I don't think we're gonna be on TV. I think it'll just be a CNN.com article.
Okay.
But this is what I expect we'll now have to go through. I think that we'll. But I think we're going to come out looking good, you know, because what's on Odyssey, the roster is, it's not, you know, it's not like some of these other sites. So I think the future is very bright for us. Yeah. And thanks for having me on.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks a lot, Jeremy. All in that there. What's next on your plate? Oh,
great.
Congratulations for reaching the end of the discussion. If you enjoyed it, do be sure to leave a review or a comment or a thumbs up or whatever you need to do to show that glorious algorithm that this is some good stuff. And do be sure to go and check that back catalog, as it is brimming full of fantastic conversations. Links to provide monetary support are down there in the description as well. Have a good night.